Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Grania, ExchangeWire's Head of Marketing and your host for today. I'm delighted to be joined in person by Laura Chase, Managing Director at We Are 8. Welcome, Laura. How are you?
I'm good. Very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And alongside Laura, we have ExchangeWire's Head of Content, John Steele. John, how are you?
I'm not bad. Thank you very much. I am happy to be here as always.
Excellent. Well, on today's episode, we're diving into three news stories of the week. We'll be discussing the launch of Agency by Agency, Roblox ad expansion, and Google's AI search engine. To kick things off, let's dive into the recent launch of Agency by Agency, which debuted this week on the 10th of March. Agency by Agency aims to reveal the true scale of the UK's agency landscape, the contribution it makes to the economy, and the innovation that it brings. Their analysis reveals that there are 25,495 agencies active in the UK. Of those agencies, they employ 265,000 people with a total turnover of £34.9 billion. Laura, what do you make of these figures?
An enormous amount of people, a gigantic amount of money. It just makes me think, you know, with great power, what influence we have as an industry, and with great power comes great responsibility, of course, to the people that we're hiring and recruiting and employing, what we're doing with the money, where we're channeling it all, and are we using that influence and power to do good in the world? So, I think this is... It's interesting because I really liked some of the topics that they had coming down the tracks. So I had a look. They're saying they're going to do stuff on the future of recruitment, women in the sector, next gen agencies. So I think when you're responsible for this many people and that amount of money, exploring these topics and lifting the lid on the sector's impact more broadly on society and the world and humanity is really important. So excited to see what's to come with this.
Absolutely. John, on seeing these numbers too, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, they're like some big figures. It's huge numbers, and really nice to have it quantified quite how big the agency landscape is in the UK, and the amount of money that we bring to the economy in the agency landscape. I think it is nice to have a breakdown. It's good to see this, the agency by agency coming out this week, as well as the all-in survey being sent around to try and again quantify what's going on inside our industry. And yeah, to Laura's point, it just shows how much money there is in the agency landscape. And also that does come with that responsibility. I was surprised by the sheer amount of agencies. I think that was the first thing. I would never have put it in even close to that level, the amount of agencies that there are. Numbers are huge, not surprising, but a big, big figure. And the employment of 265,000 people is really impressive. And in terms of the creative industries, just seeing the importance of it to the country, it's really nice to have it laid bare, I think. I think it's something that can be undervalued, but anyone who works in it knows the value it brings to the country and to the economy. And it's encouraging to see it quantified in this way, and nice to see that, as Laura said again, that we're going to have more of a breakdown and more of an understanding of what the agency landscape looked like through this and through All In, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. They're huge numbers for sure. The dating mapping indicates that the UK agency sector contributes 20.5 billion pounds in gross value added, with the GVA per agency employee of £77,438. This figure, I guess, essentially reflects the contribution of agencies to the overall economy. John, do you think this might influence the way agencies are valued?
I think that links to my last answer. And yeah, I hope so. I think that the creative agencies can be undervalued when it comes to the bigger political, bigger economic discussions. I think investment in the creative industries is a very easy thing to be cut in times of either austerity or, purse string tightening. And as again, as I said, I think people who work in the creative industries and now in this agency landscape know the value it brings. We know the kind of figures that are worked with. And this quantifies that really, really nicely to show exactly 20.5 billion in gross value added is a huge figure and a wonderful figure to contribute. So yeah, it can't really be denied how much value the agency sector brings.
I think it's good seeing the numbers, but what I think it will be important to hopefully that will evolve from this work is like the bigger picture stuff, because there's people here and there's revenue and money here, but actually media, it impacts absolutely everyone everywhere. It impacts our culture. It impacts the way we treat each other. It impacts everyone every day. So it would be good. And it seems like that's the intention here, to start to unpick, like, actually, you know, what's our bigger role and how are we feeding into all these important things more broadly?
Yeah, and I think that's a kind of a good lead into my next question, which would be about the impact of having this data. What do you think that will mean in terms of decision making and the broader creative industry? How do you think it will impact that?
Well, I hope lifting the lid, isn't it? I hope it will make people reflect more on where they're going. I hope it will encourage progress. I hope it will encourage innovation. I hope it will shine a light on those that are doing things brilliantly, and bring that to the forefront of the industry and the conversation. And because when transparency should bring great progress, so that's what I hope it leads to, like people getting a sense of what excellent really looks like and how we can make big strides, and we all push each other forward together.
No, absolutely. And John, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number being revealed that there are 25,495 agencies in the UK should make people think a little bit that there aren't just three to spend their money with.
So true.
We've been doing, I've had a podcast yesterday talking about RGA leaving IPG and becoming independent again, which was, a really interesting story given IPG being bought recently. I think that it could open people's eyes to the choice that out there, that there are independent agencies doing great creative work and really contributing, and that they are there to be considered. I don't expect everyone to want 25,000 pitches for each thing that comes up, but I think to reveal that there is that breadth of creativity, not necessarily just in a holdco model, but across the UK and regionally and across all parts of the UK, I think it's very encouraging, actually.
I'd love this, because the thing is with some of these things, they're behind a paywall, aren't they? And that's how many of those 25,495 agencies will have enough spare cash there to be able to access this. So that's the question in my mind. Does it help the bigger ones do more and put the smaller ones at a disadvantage?
Yeah, there's definitely a rub there.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting point.
Mm.
There's definitely a lot going on with agencies at the moment. And John, you've kind of touched upon that as well in your previous comments. But just in general, when we're looking at the agency landscape, what are we seeing as some common challenges that are facing them?
I think definitely the kind of evolution of the holdco model. I think a lot more is going into data and AI, and AI is obviously the other challenge. We're looking at, it's a fragmented marketplace. We're looking at a lot of streamlining, AI being touted as a way forward for both foundational efficiency and creativity. I think that's a huge challenge for agencies to navigate the difference between what is good and quick and what, you know, still really does require a human touch and human creativity. And that is like really shifting the model in terms of, you know, headcount makeup, where employees are being placed in agencies. So I think they're two of the bigger challenges for me.
And Laura, anything else on that?
Yeah, I think There's a lot of talk about efficiencies and data and AI, and quite rightly, obviously. But I don't know, when advertising is done well, it's about heart. It's about humans. It's about like emotion and real connection. And that's what I worry gets lost in all of this, particularly with the giant holdcos. How as a brand can you connect with the people there to get the very best out of the humans within those agencies? So I think it kind of opens up opportunity for some of the smaller agencies. But that's a big challenge I see in the industry. It feels like we've lost a bit of what's amazing about advertising. There's not enough of it in an era where there's a lot of ad bombardment and ad clutter and just trying to show people as many impressions as we possibly can in a day and not so worried about the quality of those impressions and all of those things. So how do we make advertising just flipping great and everything it should be? Because there's challenges with recruiting into the... We heard there's 265,000 people in the industry, but there are problems with recruitment. Advertising doesn't have the best reputation for all of those reasons, ad bombardment, fraud. So if we bring advertising back to its roots and what it's truly there to do, I feel that, you know, we'll be able to connect with more people, get more talent in the industry. But, you know, it's a strange time we're living in. It's very difficult to navigate. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's I think you're dead on. It's a huge concern for the industry, is that the AI revolution is just going to allow the industry to throw more shit in more places rather than really concentrating on, like you said, the heart, the creativity that comes in, and even down to like the quality of your placements of your advertising when we're talking about programmatic, you know, where what you're appearing next to. And AI could be a lot of wonderful things in terms of efficiency, in terms of kind of workflow side of things, but it could also easily be a race to the bottom and just start another race for cheap impressions that have zero impact and are just spread across the net randomly.
There's definitely a lot to unpick here. Definitely just some very impressive numbers, and trying to digest that is going to take a while. But I think, Laura, just what you mentioned there about ad bombardment definitely leads us nicely into our second story, which is about Roblox and their ad expansion and how they've sparked backlash from creator studios. With Roblox selling more ads and sponsorship opportunities directly to brands, in-game creator studios say that the shift is cutting into their own earnings. Since Roblox started offering programmatic ads across its in-game experiences last May, studios have been finding themselves in direct competition with Roblox. Laura, what do you think about this? Is it a wise move from Roblox?
I mean, I understand completely why they're doing it. There's money there. So they want it. I'm not surprised, because there's a pattern, right? If you look at other social apps and big tech, you know, this is what happens. It's like, how do we expand and soak up more of these things? And, you know, we talk to a lot of creators, we talk to publishers, we talk to charities, we talk to all sorts over at WeRA, and it's something that comes up a lot. You build a dependence and a reliance on a platform, a Roblox in this instance. You grow your engagement, you grow your followers, you're making loads of money, it's all amazing, and then it's gone. Across social, the algorithms are tweaked, you pulled out the economic models overnight. And that's a really vulnerable place to be. And obviously we saw it with TikTok when all of the stuff was being talked about in the US, and the creators there, it's their livelihood. So I totally get from a business perspective why Roblox are doing it, but just the bigger picture is making big companies even bigger, and leaving this amazing, innovative creator community very vulnerable. And I think that's one thing that from a We Are 8 perspective, we've always been super transparent about our models. We share revenue. This percent goes here. This percent goes here. And with others, you just don't know. And you just don't know when it's going to be taken away. So I feel for all of the creators in this instance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess, John, like, what are your thoughts on this move? Are you echoing what Laura's saying?
Yeah, I never imagined myself being the voice of big capitalism on the podcast. but it did strike me, and it does, you know, and that they can do it because it is their platform. Roblox is not, like, it's not a public good. It is a private company. It's a private ecosystem. And they can do it, and they've seen the opportunity to make money, and they will take it. You know, they've offered the programmatic ads out. And I can, like Laura said, I can totally see that they have every right to, and I see why. But then I'm going to take off the big capitalist hat and also defend the creators, because as much as they know what you're getting into. You start a business here and you're making brand experiences. Ultimately you are inside someone else's platform. But it becomes a livelihood, and you know, there's like mutual benefits come from it, and then all of a sudden it's taken away. We've seen it even down to search engines and how SEO changes overnight. A little twist is made to the algorithm, and all of a sudden your traffic drops off and you don't know why. And it's down to the search engine preference. And you know, your business suffers from it. And this is how we've seen the big tech movement take hold, really, is they make these platforms that become indispensable for people. TikTok is such a good example because, you know, there was good reasons for the ban to be occurring. Mm. There were, you know, financial and political reasons for it to be occurring, but the uproar was from the creators. Like, what on earth am I going to do now? You know, those who were on TikTok shop, how am I going to sell my stuff? Those who were making, you know, ad money for what they create is like, what am I going to do next?
Yeah.
And it's easy to say, find another platform and move on. But when you've had that juice from TikTok and you're getting that kind of impressions, it's really hard to wean yourself off it or to start your business elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, two hats. One is like, yeah, it's their platform. They can sell ads on it. They can see that. Second is, it is a massive shame that they would choose to at the cost of creators who gave them the leg up and made the platform what it is. Like, this stuff is built on the creators that develop content for it. And it's a tricky one, this, for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, they've invested so much time, so much energy into building what they've built in these spaces, and to have that kind of taken away. But it's that word I mentioned before. It's the vulnerability for them. That's a frightening place to be, and no ownership of your audience. None at all. And that's what, you know, we're working very hard at 8 and to make sure people have full ownership of their audience, because it's giving control back to people, because we've lost all control. We can't control anything in these environments. We can't control what we see, what we look at, what brands we engage with. It's dangerous from a control perspective, and I think the balance just needs to be far more even and fair.
I remember, even, you know, from a very small scale, changes that happen that affect people. I remember when Twitter, as it was, moved from 140 to 280 characters, and there were people who were up in arms about this. They're like, I think I remember some bloke who's like, I got really good at using 140 characters, and now anyone's...
That is hard.
It is, you know, it's...
So many hashtags you can use as well.
And it was so funny how this community were like, but we're good at short form, and now you're offering anyone the chance to use 280 characters. But it's that you don't have that ownership. I mean, we can go a long way down what X has become now. I'm definitely not shy about expressing my hatred for it. But it is, yeah, like you say, you don't own your audience here.
No.
And you are at the whim of the tide.
Yeah, you don't own your audience, you don't own your content, you don't own anything.
No, absolutely. And let's not get John down the X route of conversation here.
Oh, come on.
Oh, there's time.
but obviously, looking at this new ad strategy, Could this eventually turn creators away from using Roblox? What does that mean for their competition? Where do we see creators going?
That's the huge question here. It's how deep the dependence is on Roblox. What kind of balances are made? I could see it putting people off. You know, there's the incentive isn't there now for what you create being monetizable. So you can imagine people looking elsewhere. But the question is where? Roblox is such a unique ecosystem that it's really hard to imagine where else people who are, you know, made themselves experts and native to Roblox are going to go.
Yeah, very true. You're completely right, really unique environment. But I think when we hear it a lot when we're talking to brands and agencies, like diversification is feeling like it's becoming more and more important. The platforms that you exist in and not over-reliance in any one place. Because, I mean, charities, I know, have been hit badly by some of the changes from a Meta perspective, and a lot of them just invested so much there. So, yeah, I'd hope that people just have that plan B.
Yeah, no, 100%. And we saw their earnings call on the 6th of February. And from that, it followed a drop in the Roblox stock price. So I guess it kind of just, we need to have a look and think about what that drop actually meant. And there's just something to watch here and see how this all unfolds, I suppose. And then with that, let's move on to our final story of the week, which is about Google and how it's testing an AI-only version of its search engine. So Google have launched an experimental version of its search engine, which exclusively features AI-generated content, instead of bringing up its classic 10 blue line links. Queries are responded to with a more comprehensive AI summary, along with links to cited web pages. The feature is available to subscribers of Google One AI Premium, which costs just under $20 a month. According to the article, a Google spokesperson says that power users want more AI responses and answer to their searches. John, do you think the same can be said for the general population?
It needs to get a lot better if they are going to roll it out. Crikey. There have been so many issues with AI overviews so far. I mean, there is issues with Google search anyway, as far as I can see. To even get to any useful information, you have to scroll down past at least 7 sponsored links, which are not remotely useful to you, I wouldn't say. But yeah, AI overviews, I can see the use. Like I enjoy using some of the LLMs for research. You know, Perplexity is good. It gives you a lot of information in a place that you need it, and AI overviews is an attempt to distill the information like that. I asked Google what the problems were with Google's AI overviews, and this is the AI overview on Google's AI overviews.
Excited for this already.
It's so good. Google AI overviews have faced significant problems with providing inaccurate, misleading, and sometimes even dangerous information, including suggesting bizarre or incorrect advice like eating rocks to increase mineral levels or using glue on pizza, primarily due to issues with data sources, struggles with satirical content, and a lack of robust quality control mechanisms, leading to widespread criticism of Google scaling back the feature's usage considerably.
Wow.
Thank you.
I won't be trying glue on my pizza.
Thank you very much.
Don't eat rocks.
As I say, this, you know, the stories like this, I remember the glue on pizza very well, and the eating rocks for minerals, and Leo Varadka being 35 meters tall were wonderful ones. But it speaks to the fact that this is still developing, and it will develop usefully. I don't see at the moment that there is that demand beyond the power users. These are people heavily invested in AI, I imagine, and how it goes. And I don't think it has that utility for the general population yet. I think a far more useful search engine would be a really good thing. But that doesn't mean that I don't see that this is the way the wind's blowing and that it's improving exponentially all the time. But at the moment, there are problems, and I would fear for an AI-only search engine and the information it would pass out.
Someone shared with me actually some stats that were published by Time magazine in early Feb, so not too long ago, but those were 87% of Brits would back a law requiring AI developers to prove their systems are safe before release, 60% in favour of outlawing the development of smarter than human AI models, and then just 9% said they trust tech CEOs to act in the public interest. So, no, I don't think the same can be said for the general population.
That's amazing. 9%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I shouldn't be surprised that the figure's that low, but they're absolutely right to have that little trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. 9%. Well, fascinating.
Yeah.
I guess if we look at this feature being rolled out and if it was accessible for more users, what impact do you think it would have? And also, they're charging $20 a month for this. Is this something that users should or would pay for? Laura, what do you think?
I mean, I don't think they're going to pay for it right now, especially with those stats we just referenced. But the internet wasn't built for this. And there's some amazing stuff out there. There's also not amazing stuff out there, but we've got this giant internet full of amazing things, and our founder and CEO Zoe often talks about, you know, superhighways, which the platforms Google, the social platforms do. They just keep people there, and people can't experience freedom through the web. Like, there's so much to feed your curiosity with, there's so much to learn, there's so much to discover, and not us at We Are Eight, but others, they're just trying to keep people in the same space, which just terrifies me, really. And I just kind of worry we're on a downward spiral. And with things like health and news, we talk a lot with the Cancer Awareness Platform, who are, you know, it's one of the most widely searched things is cancer. Because you need the right information, and I know health is looked at differently from a Google perspective, and there's some things that they do around news as well. But most people will look at things and just look at that sentence and then go from there, and it's really worrying.
John, what are your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, if it takes off, we're going to have loads more people putting Pritt stick on pizzas.
Yeah.
It's like, we're in trouble here, guys. Yeah, you know, like, how do I get more vitamins in my diet? Just eat rocks. It's full of minerals. So I fear for the general intelligence of people in this. This is the answer. But I think you're right, Laura. Like, it's people are being conditioned to look for that one, like, one-line response to stuff and take it. Because it has been served to them by the internet, take it as gospel. Like, I know people are more discerning that. There are people who aren't more discerning than that. There are people who have been, you know, brought up in this, who see that as a factual reference, and it's worrying. I also agree on, like, this is Google's, you know, this is putting their stake in the ground for keeping their search engine monopoly. And keeping people invested in their platform and keeping that attention with Google. Google has, you know, become the go-to source for search, and they are watching that slip away now. They're a first time in two decades. They're a genuine rivals as a search engine, and this is their attempt of staying ahead of the curve. But yeah, I have the same fears as you in terms of, you know, these platforms, all they want is people not to ever leave and not to experience the open web. They want you in their walled garden, enjoying their walled garden, and not to, you know, taking that away from everything else that's out there. And Google has long been a gatekeeper for the rest of the internet. And this, for me, is, I first of all don't believe that there is the demand. And as you've attested to through those time statistics, there probably isn't. But also it needs to be better thought through than just a 6-line summary of something at the top. I'm getting a little bit sick of AI trying to tell me that it wants to summarize my emails. It's like, it's a 3-line email I can read. Like, I send emails for a living. Stop asking if I can write my emails for me or read my emails back to me. I do not need this, and people do not need this. Anyway, that's my first rant over. Thank you.
I just worry so much will get lost. And the ecosystem we've built, every single post taps out. We don't need to keep you scrolling through the feeds to watch more and more ads. Our whole world is built to drive people to new and interesting places on the internet. And that to us is healthy, and that's how we'll grow, and that's how publishers grow, and all of these important things. And this is going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can all agree that there is a lot of room for improvement there and that nobody will pay $20 a month either. So yeah, I guess just before we go, Laura, it's obviously been great to have you here. Thank you so much. But can you please just share a little bit more about your role and how things are at We Are Ace?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's been lovely to be here. So yeah, I'm the MD, UK MD over at We Are Eight. We were chatting before and I was saying I worked at Hearst for 17 years before before I joined We Are Eight. So did a long stint in publishing and then shifted over as I was chief commercial officer at first actually at We Are Eight and focused in on the brands and the agencies. And a year or so ago shifted over to the MD role, which has just been illuminating and joyful and just wonderful. It's amazing to be part of something that can just do amazing things. But yeah, having the MD role, and I say this a lot, but I do love it because it connects me into so many different things. I'm working with the record labels, I'm working with the publishers, I'm working with policymakers, I'm working with charities, I'm working with brands and agencies. I'm meeting the most amazing people. And there are so many great people and brands and there's so many people doing amazing things. And our job and my job at We Are Eight is actually to connect them all in one place so that we can just power something flipping amazing. So yeah, love it.
Amazing. I'm glad everything's going so well for you. And just to get your perspective, it'd be great to hear what you think the state of social media is looking like at the moment.
Yeah. Sometimes, it's terrifying. It truly is. And I feel like I walk around every day and it's very depressing to talk about where we've got to. And we're very focused at We Are Eight. Look, we can come out the other side of this, and we are coming out the other side of this. We've built the solution over here. But I mean, there's bereaved parents on the news every single day. There are headlines, there are politicians and governments trying to figure out what on earth to do. There is suicide content that's rife. There is pornography being showed to 11-year-olds. I went and below. I went into and spent some time at a Childline call center a few weeks ago, which was wonderful. And they just do such amazing work over there. But they were talking. The volunteers there were talking to us about sextortion, because the amount of calls on that has just completely skyrocketed. A lot of young boys, males. And that's kind of not even getting into like anxiety, depression, fraud, like all of these things. And as a mum of a 9 and a 7-year-old, like it's just absolutely terrifying. And the news headlines aren't going to go away. Obviously, we've seen lots of stuff coming through since the beginning of this year as well on Meta and other platforms. And it feels like there needs to be light and focus on newness and doing things differently. And I just huge kudos to our founder and CEO, Zoe, who's just absolutely amazing. She just saw all of this. She saw all the money that's being pumped over there despite all of these problems, and just thought, we can rewire and re-engineer this whole thing. We can get money back out into the world. We can bring people the very best of social media and technology. So I'm going to build it. And she has, with an amazing team over in Greece. And we continue to evolve and improve the product all the time. There's so much happening and lots of big announcements coming around partnerships and collaborations that we're doing that we're super excited about. It's hard to talk about where we are now because it's just distressing and scary, but it's joyful to talk and think about what's possible, and not even what's possible, like what's here with WeRH. 200 billion is going to go to Meta this year. In our world, we give back out 60% of that. We give that to publishers, to journalists. We give that to charities. We give that to you, the people that are watching us for free everywhere else. We redistribute and we cut out the hate and the toxicity, and give people a space where they can feel good about being themselves and feel inspired by loads of amazing stuff that's happening in the world, and they don't have to look at all of that nonsense that's going on in other places. So bright things ahead is what we're very focused on.
I like that positivity there at the end. And obviously we're looking forward to seeing more of what's to come for WeRH, yeah, and how things go for you. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great having you, and appreciate you sharing your time today.
Oh, thank you. I've loved it.
And John, to you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Sorry for the rant.
Yeah. And of course, yeah, thank you for your fascinating AI search results there too.
I'm always, you know, always bring something to the pod.
Thank you everyone at home for listening. And that is it for the MadTech podcast this week. We look forward to you tuning in next week.
You've been listening to the MadTech podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.